Hey, leader, and welcome to episode number 354 of the L3 Leadership Podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow to your maximum potential and to maximize the impact of your leadership. My name is Doug Smith, and I am your host, and today's episode is brought to you by my friends at Baratung Advisors. We're also recording live from the Burgo Realty Studio, which we'll be talking more and more about in upcoming episodes, so stay tuned for that. Very excited about that partnership. And if you are new to the podcast, welcome. I am so glad that you're here, and I hope that you enjoy our content and become a subscriber. Know that you can also watch all of our episodes over on our YouTube channel, so make sure you're subscribed there as well. And as always, if you've been with us for a while and that podcast has impacted your life, it would mean the world to me if you would leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you listen to. That really does help us to grow our audience and reach more leaders. So thank you in advance for that. Well, leader, in today's episode, you'll hear my interview with Vance Rausch. Let me tell you a little bit about Vance. He is the co-founder of Overflow, a game-changing tech company allowing ministries and nonprofits to receive stock and crypto donations. He's also the pastor of Vive Church in Silicon Valley. And we had a phenomenal conversation. In our conversation, you'll hear us talk about how Overflow is allowing people to be more generous to nonprofits and churches, what he thinks about the future of the church, his top fundraising tips, his thoughts on generosity, what he's learned about entrepreneurship through starting his company Overflow, and of course, I take him through the lightning round as well. Vance drops so much wisdom in this episode, you're going to love it. But before we dive into the conversation, just a few announcements. This episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast is sponsored by Baratung Advisors. The financial advisors at Baratung Advisors help educate and empower clients to make informed financial decisions. You can find out how Baratung Advisors can help you develop a customized financial plan for your financial future by visiting their website at baratungadvisors.com. That's B-E-R-A-T-U-N-G advisors.com. Securities and investment products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Baratung Advisors, LPL Financial, and L3 Leadership are separate entities. I also want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers and just had a wonderful experience. And not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, for every couple that comes in engaged, they give them a book to help prepare for marriage, and we just love that. So if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out hennyjewelers.com. And with all that being said, let's dive right in. Here's my conversation with Vance Rausch. Hey, Vance, welcome to the L3 Leadership Podcast. So excited for this conversation. Love the work that you do. And you founded a company called Overflow. And why don't we just start there? Why don't you just tell us a little bit about Overflow, why you founded it, and what you do?
Thank you, Doug. This is such a privilege. I love the work that you do and love what you do with this podcast to create a space for leaders and us developing together in this community. Just a little bit about myself. Background in technology, I started my career at Google. And then from there, simultaneously co-founded a church here in the Silicon Valley called Vive Church alongside my wife and our lead pastors, Adam and Kira Smolcom. They are from Australia. And so reading the Bible in an Aussie accent is just better, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so, That's awesome. Yeah, that's a little bit of my personal background. I say that because it's relevant to Overflow. Because I would say that Overflow is really like if my experience in ministry and technology had a baby, that's Overflow. And I realized that in ministry, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, I know you help lead a 501c3 nonprofit organization. What's so important is fundraising, right? Getting the funds and the resources necessary to fulfill the mission and the vision, that we have. And so for the past decade, I've been privileged to be able to raise tens of millions of dollars to the local church so that we can fund the great work that the local church does in the communities that we serve. And in that journey, I discovered that many, many people are starting to hold their wealth across all generations in non-cash assets. But, you know, the process for giving non-cash assets is pretty manual. So I don't think that we've been able to scale it to the level that I believe is possible. So that's where I came up with Overflow, simply a technology platform that streamlines and scales the ability for people that do have stocks in crypto and maybe other non-cash assets to be able to easily give those non-cash assets completely online to their favorite nonprofit or cause. And so that's Overflow in a nutshell.
Yeah. And so, you know, give us some perspective. What has the impact of that been? So you had the idea. It sounds like a great idea. You know, I'm a director of development, raise money all the time. And I'm like, yes, I actually, you know, I just shared with you before that we're most likely going to go in with Overflow later this year. What's the impact been for nonprofits and churches?
It's been huge. I mean, we're about 2.5 years old right now as an organization. So relatively new, but becoming very established. We created this product and didn't realize how much of a felt need it was in the 501c3 church and charity space. And that's been such a privilege to be able to solve what is clearly a problem for development directors like yourself, executive pastors, leaders of organizations that are fundraising. And so in just 2.5 years, we have now eclipsed over 400 organizations that we're serving. So the likes of, you know, some of the biggest ones in America in the church and charity space. And we're approaching over $100 million worth of value through our platform.
Wow. That's incredible. I wanted to talk more about fundraising and philanthropy in a minute, but you know, you mentioned you're also a church planner, so that'll lead to the fundraising story. But interestingly, you know, I heard you share that I believe you started the church right across from Google, right? Is that true? So that is true. I'm just curious, you know, I'm in Pittsburgh. I think a lot of times the perspective is, you know, Silicon Valley, no one cares about God. There's no hunger for God. I'm just curious, what was that like? Have you found that to be true? What's the spiritual temperament over in Silicon Valley?
I think that there is most definitely a hunger for God. If I were to broaden it a bit more, there's a hunger for some sort of spirituality, if I were to say it a different way. Where there might have not been a hunger before is for church, not because people are not hungry in community, but because I think people have a preconceived notion of what they think church is. Right. And so when we say church to many people in the Silicon Valley, immediately what they go to is judgment, rules, limitation. They go towards maybe even thinking about white collars in cathedrals that are empty on a Sunday. And, you know, I am just fast friends with you now, Doug, so I'm not sure what type of church you worship at, but for most of us, that's actually not the church that we're connected to. And so a lot of it is reframing it for people here. And so we actually did this campaign early on in our church journey because we would invite people to this church plant that we were starting and we would tell them, hey, you should come along. You should come this Sunday. We would love to have you. And people would say this in the Silicon Valley, oh, that's cool for you, but I'm not religious. And what we would say is, oh, perfect. Neither are we. And it would totally like flip the paradigm for people. We found so much success in this language that we put a billboard on 101. It's like where Apple puts up billboards, right? And our billboard said, not religious, ? Neither are we. And till this date, it is the most successful campaign we've ever done in the life of our church, bringing in people that can overcome that preconceived notion of religion and maybe that being a bad experience for them or a bad perception for them and allowing them to discover a place of relationship and community instead.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm just out of curiosity. Yeah. You know, the church, I'm friends with a lot of pastors and leaders listen to this. What do you see as the future of the church? What are you seeing? What changes are you guys making? I'm just curious.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think when people talk about the future of the church, they're focused on products. You know, they're focused on, oh, the future of the church is online streaming. The future of the church is having it in your phone on an app. The future of the church. And it's interesting, right? Because when people talk about the future of the church, all they're doing is they are primarily talking about what Apple and Facebook are leading us to believe the future is, right? And so we just copy, the church is just copying what Facebook says is the future, which we all just say, oh, well, Facebook says that virtual reality is the future, that metaverse is the future. So the future of the church is metaverse. Not necessarily, right? Let me actually just simplify this. I'll tell you what the future of the church is. This is unequivocal. The future of the church is people. So let me make it more specific. The future of the church is Gen Z. So outside of a product that is limited, that is going to fade eventually, because for every Snapchat, there's an Instagram. For every Instagram, there's a TikTok. For every TikTok, there's going to be a new thing, okay? So the future of the church is not based on a technology or a product. The future of the church is based on a people. And who's next up? Gen Z. So if you want to think about the future of the church, how are you reaching Gen Z?
Wow. Well, hey, I'll just ask you that question. How are you guys thinking about reaching Gen Z?
You know,
I wasn't planning on going this direction, but it's interesting.
I love it. You know, I think that on a company level for Overflow, that's why we're so bullish on what we're doing, is because we have a pretty deep conviction that one of the future services that Gen Z is leveraging and has conviction on in terms of what financial freedom looks like for them going forward is connected to cryptocurrency. And so, you know, cryptocurrency is a $1 trillion market cap today and growing. I mean, there's been some ups and downs along the way, but still today it's a $1 trillion market cap. That's huge. And this is only like a decade long industry. So 90% of that, 90% of the crypto value that's owned is by millennials and Gen Z. Wow. So if you want to talk about the financial future of Gen Z, they are making a bet with their dollars today on crypto. Okay. And so, you know, Overflow obviously helps facilitate donations in the form of crypto. So if you want to engage Gen Z in tithing, if you want to engage Gen Z on giving and generosity, if you are not allowing them to give Bitcoin and Ethereum, you're not actually serving them. Okay. So that's one aspect. There's another aspect of serving Gen Z that's probably a larger conversation that I believe there are many churches out there that are at the forefront of this and are leaning in to this. But there are many things around short form video. There are many things around the way that Gen Z thinks and the way that interact. You know, what's interesting about millennials is millennials actually grew up in this unique season where they understood analog and digital, right? And so we weren't fully born with the internet. We weren't fully born with the internet. Like, the internet was coming up with us. And so we understood analog and digital. Gen Z only understands digital. They were born into the internet. And so the internet is so native to them more than it is even millennials. And so that's why things like NFTs, non-fungible tokens, and internet-based communities and decentralized autonomous organizations have specifically caught fire and have engaged Gen Z, because they grew up in the internet. They grew up in gaming. They grew up with Twitch. They grew up with all these online avatars. And I think we just have to acknowledge that's how they grew up, not fixating ourselves to a specific technology to reach them, but understanding the psychology and how they've been brought up.
So fascinating. Well, I wasn't planning on going there, but Shannon, I think that's really, really insightful. I do want to talk about just fundraising. So, yeah. You know, you've had to fundraise, obviously, being a church. Can you share, you know, I've heard you share a story on other podcasts about, did you have to raise, what was it? How many millions of dollars and
8 million, 8 million in 45 days.
So I would love to do that at our nonprofit. So what do I need to do, man? Lay out the steps. Tell us that story.
So we were tasked with raising $8 million in 45 days because for a decade, we were bumping in and bumping out as a church. Many pastors that are listening to this probably are saying amen right now, because you're probably doing that. And that's not the vision, is to bump in, bump out for the rest of your life and to create pop-up churches. we don't forsake those days. Those days are beautiful because you got to start somewhere. But really, the ideal is to get some bricks and mortar, right? Is to be able to get a permanent location so that you can really lay a stake in the ground in the city that you want to serve. And so for 10 years, we've been saving up money to be able to purchase a building one day. And there was a unique opportunity that was presented to us. The only problem was that this building that was perfect for where our church could grow into was $32 million. And so long story short, you know, we've saved a lot of money. We had some financial partners, but at the end of the day, even with all of that, we were $8 million short. So in faith, we put in the deposit, earnest money deposit of $500,000. But if we didn't raise $8 million in 45 days, they were going to take that $500,000. We're going to lose it. So talk about like a faith step, right? And so we were completely transparent with the church through this whole process. And what was interesting is that we thought the $8 million was going to come from a few multi-million dollar gifts. And we realized that that wasn't going to be the case. There wasn't investors that wanted to participate in this, and there wasn't anybody in our community that had the level of wealth to be able to underwrite this endeavor. And so we quickly realized that it was going to take the generosity of the many, not the generosity of the few, that's going to make this happen. Long story short, within 45 days, Doug, I'm talking like little girls in lemonade stands, all the way to families selling their homes and going back to renting, right? 700 family units, we end up raising the money in 45 days and closing on the building. Half of the money raised in 45 days, so almost $4 million, was through stock and crypto.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So talk to fundraisers and leaders too, because you know, anyone can stand up and say, hey, we need $8 million in 45 days, but people don't just sell their house when they hear that. Can you talk to leaders about casting a compelling vision? What is it about, you know, speak to fundraisers. What is it about vision casting and the why behind what you said that enabled people to want to sell their house and be that generous?
Yeah, three things. Like you said, vision casting, right? So your ability to fundraise is going to be directly correlated to the vision that you cast. So here's a Silicon Valley principle. If you want to raise $10 million from a venture capitalist, you need a $1 billion idea. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you have a $10 million idea, they're not going to give you $10 million for a $10 million idea, right? They want a $1 billion idea because they want a return on their investment, okay? So the church realm and fundraising philanthropically is not exactly the same, because people know they're not going to get a return on their money in terms of capital, but they are looking for a return on impact. And so you need maybe not like a $1 billion idea in terms of how much money you're going to make, but you need a $1 billion idea as an analogy to the level of impact that you're going to have on this world, right? And so when you think about your vision, you need to be dreaming big. Your ability to fundraise is going to be directly correlated with the size of your vision, right? So that's number one. Vision only takes you so far though. The reason why we're able to 10 years in cast a vision and people respond to the vision is because for 10 years, every year we've done a vision gala. And here's the key. Whatever we said at the vision gala, that next year we did. If you say something and you do it and you consistently do what you say across 10 years, whatever vision that you cast, there's going to be an enthusiasm to meet that vision because there's credibility in consistency, right? And so that's number two. Number three, this is the part I think people miss. People don't only sell houses because of the vision. People don't only sell houses because of the credibility of your organization. People sell houses to be able to give because they've formed their identity within your organization. Right. And so at some point, you need to cultivate such a community of generosity where it is desired and it is aspired to be considered one of the generous within the community, right? People need to start associating their identity with, I'm just a generous person and I'm willing to do irrational things. I'm willing to do crazy things. I'm willing to do things that maybe people don't understand because I've found my identity and purpose in this. And that's why we call people that are incredibly generous in our church, we call them things like kingdom builders. You guys are kingdom builders. You guys are vision carriers. And all of a sudden, they can build their life around that, right?
Do you guys do a Kingdom Builders campaign? I know some every churches year locally do that. I think it's a brilliant idea. So you guys have a whole separate fund and give away 100%. Can you share that idea, just what you guys do with that? Because, man, it is so brilliant. I truly believe that every church needs to do Kingdom Builders. So talk about that.
We align our Kingdom Builders, Vision Builders campaign towards the end of the year. We do this for multiple reasons because number one, towards the end of the year, people are already thinking for tax purposes to make a significant gift, right? And then number two, you know, heading towards the holidays. So we do it in November, but heading towards the holidays, people are just already kind of in a generous mode. And so that's the timing of our Vision Builders and Kingdom Builders. And how we structure it is that every single November, we host what's called a Vision Gala. At the Vision Gala, it's an invite-only event. So anybody that's given over $10,000 to our church within that calendar year is exclusively invited to this Vision Builders Gala, Kingdom Builders. And they are participating. So it's about 500 people in the room, and they are participating in a capital campaign night. So we're not backwards about it, right? If people are pushing back because there's a registration fee to cover the nice dinner that we provide. And they're saying, oh, hey, is there a discount on the registration fee? We kindly and, you know, very graciously respond with, this might not be the night for you because it's going to be much more expensive than the dinner that you pay for. This is a night of generosity and responding to the vision. And so how we, include people is we say, hey, you've been invited because you've shown that you're a leader in generosity in our community. And because of that, you have a privileged opportunity to respond to the vision first. This is a night where everybody gets dressed up. In the Silicon Valley, people are usually wearing flip-flops. So it's really unique to be able to see people in a suit and a tie, in gala dresses and things like that. It's a spectacular night. And what we do specifically is we celebrate all we accomplished the year before, and then we cast vision for the year ahead. We're very clear on how much we need to raise to fulfill the vision initiatives. And then we ask people to make commitments of what they're going to contribute on that night or by end of year so that we can announce to the church what vision elements we're going to be able to do in the year ahead.
Do you raise money that night just out of curiosity? Yeah. Or is it people pledge? Okay. So curious, because obviously we do a gala as well. Can people give on overflow like that night? Could they give stock, gifts, crypto, et cetera? And it's super. So now I'm just asking, like, so if we do a live event, hey, if you want to give through stock today, just, hey, you can go, here's the link. It just got text to you. Boom.
That's the magic moment, right, Doug, is that now you have a tool where they could just scan a QR code or go to a link. And instead of waiting to fulfill it, they can fulfill it within the energy of the night. Here's the thing. Yes. Time kills all deals. That's a sales principle. Time kills all deals. So the longer it takes for somebody to go from commitment to fulfillment, the more opportunity they spend it instead of give it.
Huge. I'm in for overflow, man. And if you're fundraisers, if you're listening to this, pastors, if you're listening to this, this is such a unique tool. I've been in fundraising for over 12 years. This is a game changer. Super, super excited. I'll leave this open-ended on the fundraising end. Any other advice you would give to fundraisers? You've shared so many good things already.
Yeah. I think that one thing that's interesting is understanding that people give to brands, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I was saying earlier about consistency, building credibility, so doing what you say, That's an example of how you reinforce your brand. That's an example of how your brand is now associated to trustworthiness. But there's so many other things that associates your brand to certain characteristics. For example, are you thinking about an Envision Gala setting, the venue that you pick? Are you thinking about the design? Are you thinking about the way that people enter? Are you thinking about your emails that are instructing people on the logistics? And so people are evaluating your brand every step of the way, consciously or subconsciously. And if you are not consistently executing with excellence, then your brand is not going to be connected to excellence. Why is excellence important? Is because if they're going to give big to you, they want to be assured that you know how to deploy their capital in an excellent way, right? And so I think sometimes in this weird 501c3 philanthropic world that we live in, we think that the number one goal of our organization is to be cheap. No, that's actually opposite. And it's not about being expensive for expensive's sake. It's being intentional. And so intentional does not always equal cheap, right? And so how are you communicating excellence? How are you communicating care? That doesn't always mean a dollar amount, but it's a mentality, right, that needs to be carried throughout the organization, throughout every single team member that is building relationships with your congregation, your community, your supporter base.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do you have any stats? I think I heard you quote a stat on just how much giving the people in the church do. I'm just curious. Do you have any fascinating stats on the state of giving overall compared to what could be given?
Yeah, religious giving is the number one most generous category, which is cool. So $485 billion was given last year. 33% of that was religious giving. The second place category after religious giving was education at 13%. So people giving to their college alma mater is not even close to the type of people that are giving through the church, to the local church and through the local church. And so that's kind of cool. I think that we're still at the beginning days. The reality is that most of that $485 billion is being given through people's checking and savings account, but 90% of wealth is in non-cash assets, and that has not been completely unlocked yet. And so that's, you know, our revelation and our motivation at Overflow is, hey, if 90% of wealth is in non-cash assets, and people don't have an easy way, and people haven't been educated on how to do that, we are in the first inning of the first inning of what generosity could look like. That $485 billion should be $1 trillion in a few years.
Wow. And for people listening to this, everyone's already heard me say, I'm in, I'm sold. People want to learn more about Overflow or get a demo or anything like that, where can they go?
Yeah, you can check out our website, overflow.co. Overflow.co. It's not .com. .com is like $600,000. Somebody can donate that to me so I can get that domain. But overflow.co. If you want, you could go overflow.co/L3 so that we can take care of you specifically because Doug is our friend.
Love it, man. Yeah, websites pricing is funny, man. I've been trying to get DougSmith.com for a long, long time, and it finally became available. It's 19 grand. I'm like, $19,000 for a website? So
crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to shift into just generosity. So, You know, we've been talking a lot about raising money, but I know you're very, very passionate about personal generosity. Can you just talk about generosity and why it's important to you?
Man, we could talk for hours on generosity. Proverbs 11:24 says, the world of the generous gets larger and larger. Let's just be really practical, right? I think this is something that everybody can connect with at a human level. You know, when you go to a restaurant with family or friends and you go to get the bill and they've already covered it, you know that feeling, right? Where You're like, you're low-key offended, but you're also like so impacted because like deep down inside, you're like, wow, thank you. Like That was amazing. And something happens inside of you where most people respond with this feeling internally like, I want to be that type of person. I want to be the person that covers the bill. I want to be the person that can bless others. That is something, regardless of your religious persuasion or your belief system or whatever, that is something so intrinsic to our humanity that nobody can deny. The world of the generous is enlarged. It is so much better to live a life like this than to live a life with closed fists, right? Like when you live a life with closed fists, the proverb goes on to say, the world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. And so what's so fascinating about the human experience is that I found generosity brings us closer together. Generosity unifies humanity. Generosity creates bigger, more fulfilling lives. And so why I'm so passionate about Overflow is not just because I think it's going to be a massively successful company and valuable, and all of its employees and stakeholders hopefully will do well. Not only because I think that our customers deserve a product like this so they can raise more money and do more things, but because fundamentally, I believe if I can give more people more ways to be able to be generous, we will have a better world. Our mission is literally to inspire the world to give. If we can inspire every single human being on this planet to be generous in some form or fashion, I believe we would have left the world in a better place.
Can you talk about your journey of generosity? You know, I know in the church we're tithers, right? We give 10%, but generosity looks different for everyone. I'm just curious how you've grown in generosity throughout your journey.
Yeah, it started with that, you know, feeling of our Asian uncles covering the bill and being so impacted by that. It progressed to college when finally my junior year, I was able to get a scholarship. And I remember the sensation of somebody out there donating a sum of money so that I didn't have to work three jobs anymore and I could focus on school for the last 2 years, right? And then it progressed to my career at Google, where this company, you know, they are incentivized to give us certain perks, but the level at which Google was very generous towards its employees, they ranked number one employer in the world for many years over, wow, was just an interesting concept that I think they really pioneered. And there's a lot of ways that created entitlement, but for me, it didn't. It created gratitude. And so along the way, secularly, I was met with these moments where I was impacted by the first principle of generosity. But to your point, religiously and contextualizing it in my faith, I've come to the understanding that I can only truly be generous if I believe that all of what I have is actually given to me by God, right? Mm-hmm. Because before, when I didn't fully understand that, I bucketed generosity more as duty and responsibility, right? Wow. And now that I understand that actually it was God who first gave to us, it was God that initiated generosity towards us first, it's my only reasonable response. And so I don't give based on obligation, I give based on gratitude. Gratitude-based giving is the most generous giving on the planet. Gratitude-based giving beats guilt giving any day of the week. That's why if you can see a commercial with something that's trying to pull at your heartstrings and maybe a tragedy story, you will give based on guilt a certain measure. But just watch. If somebody, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but if you can convert somebody from guilt-based giving to generosity-based giving, every time they will actually give more and they will give more consistently.
So you talked to, you know, a lot about the mentality of generosity-based giving really comes from a spirit of gratitude. You know, if someone's listening to this, whether they're a person of faith or not, you know, where would you encourage people to start their generosity journeys?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question because I would start with gratitude. You know, so two things. I start every single day with gratitude. You know, there's this term, right? Count your blessings. Do it. Like, do it daily. It'll revolutionize your life. Also, yes, at Overflow, during key meetings, we start with what are you thankful for? And we go around the horn and each person shares something specific and distinct. You can't copy another person on what they're grateful for that day before we start a meeting. And so there are infrastructures in place within my life and within our company that have a rhythm of generosity or a rhythm of gratitude to it. And if you have a rhythm of gratitude, it will not be if you will operate a generous lifestyle. It will be when and how you will operate a generous lifestyle.
What would your encouragement be just for those who are people of faith, you know, when it comes to tithing? I'm very, very passionate about this. Yeah. And so, you know, people will be like 10%, you know, I'll start with one. Like, what would your challenge be to people who maybe have never tithed or have, you know, given maybe a percent or two or just thrown, you know, a couple dollars in the basket? What would you challenge people in when it comes to tithing?
Oh man, we could have a good pot on this. You know, that's funny. Like, I'll tithe 10%. I'm going to start with three. Well, then it's not a tithe, right? Because right. That tithe literally means 10. Like it's another word for 10. So I don't know what 3% is. Maybe it's a thrithe. I don't know what that is, but it's definitely not a tithe, right? You know, tithe is a biblical principle. And you know, there's a whole teaching that we could probably do on this. But ultimately, my encouragement to people at a high level is if you believe in God, and if you believe in his word, and if you believe in his first principles, tithing is biblical. And I would rather give back 10% to God and have the 90% that I keep as redeemed and covered by him, rather than keeping 100% to myself and doing it on my own, right? And so it's just an act of worship. It's a submission. It's saying that I am going to respond to this principle that God directed me clearly in his word as an act of worship and submission to him because I want his covering over it. Is it a vending machine? Right? Is it like, oh, I tithe, therefore, you know, I give, therefore I get something in return? No, God is not a vending machine. Here's the thing. God will bless you regardless if you tithe or not. That's how good God is. His blessing is not withheld whether or not you tithe, but there is a principle of submission. There is a principle of coming under covering. And that is in your faith, that is in your family, that is in your finances, that is in every aspect of your life, is how are you submitting yourself to Jesus as not just Savior, thanks for saving me, God, but also as Lord. Like, I need you to be involved in this because I don't want to do it on my own.
So good. I want to shift now. Just the leadership podcast, you're an entrepreneur, you worked at Google. Can you kind of give us an overview of your journey from being an employee at Google to actually starting and launching your own thing? Obviously, you're a pastor too, so very entrepreneurial. What was that journey like? And then I'll ask you some questions around entrepreneurship.
Yeah, one of the best things about Google is they have a really cool principle and culture within their company around autonomy. They are really good at having a rigorous recruiting process so that they know they're hiring the best people. So when the best people come in, they can entrust those people to figure it out, right? They're not micromanaging. They're giving an incredible level of autonomy to their employees, which I believe autonomy produces creativity and creativity produces incredible results. There's also a lot of ownership when you feel like you're autonomous. In that environment, in that atmosphere, I grew in this appetite that was already inside of me, I believe, of entrepreneurship. And so it was really good that I started my career at Google because that autonomy, you know, unveiled this incredible appetite to be entrepreneurial, to work on projects, to work on moonshots, to work on innovation, to further things faster and accelerate towards accomplishing things with high impact. And when I felt that I was at a place where Google wasn't the best format for that anymore, because I had ideas that were even outside of what Google was working on. That's when I started thinking about an entrepreneurial journey and thinking about what would it look like if I started a company, right? And so I would say that if you love autonomy, if you love uncertainty, if you thrive with wanting to create the future that doesn't already exist today, then you probably are an entrepreneur. You probably should think about a life of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So if someone's listening to this and they're saying, that's me, I feel like that, what advice would you give someone who's actually going to make the jump? Should they just jump, quit their full-time job right now as they're listening to this and jump? Like what does that process need to look like for someone serious about this?
It's really contextual, but for most people, it's probably not a smart financial decision to just make the jump, quit your job, have no money coming in. Here's the thing. It's hard to be creative if you're trying to survive, right? And so, yeah. You know, in the day and age we live today, especially in this macroeconomic environment where people are losing jobs, if you have a job, you should probably be grateful for your job and just think of your job being able to subsidize a side hustle, right? And I would try to validate your side hustle as much as possible before you actually make it your full-time job. Because if you are insecure about how you're going to get a meal or how you're going to pay your rent, it's hard to operate in a positive sum environment, which is what you need when you're starting something new, right? You can't have a scarcity mindset when you're trying to create the future.
Yeah. I just want to ask a few lessons learned here. What have you learned about rejection as an entrepreneur?
Oh, wow. That it's relentless. You know, you're going to feel rejection from investors. You're going to feel rejection from employees. You're going to feel rejection from family that don't understand what you do. You're going to feel rejection from friends that maybe you don't have as much time to hang out with anymore. Rejection is going to be relentless, right? And so you got to make sure that whatever you're building is worth it. You got to make sure. Here's the thing. If you're going to choose this life of entrepreneurship, might as well choose the biggest thing possible that you could try to do. Because whether it's big or small, it's probably going to be the same level of rejection. So might as well just like shoot for the stars, you know, and land on the moon, as they say.
What have you learned about selling? You've landed some pretty big clients there.
Yeah. Selling is the art of not selling. So, you know, it's more about creating something so valuable that solves an actual problem and simply inviting people to be able to be part of that solution that you created, right? The reality is nobody likes a salesperson. Here's the thing. If you were on my cul-de-sac right now and I started running after you, what would you do? You would run away. Right? And so if there's this like air of desperation, if there's this air of like, I'm chasing you, you're running away. But if there's this posture of inviting you to something that you believe is going to provide value for you, then it changes the whole dynamic. And that's when you can become, I believe, a more effective quote unquote salesperson.
Yeah. And obviously the leadership podcast, I have to ask, what have you learned about leadership in your time at Overflow?
Yeah. Leadership is bleedership. Your ability to increase in your capacity as a leader is directly correlated to your capacity to manage pain. And so you're really only one layer of complexity away. You're only one layer of pain away from growing in your leadership.
That's good stuff, man. I want to transition to family. You're a father of four, is that correct?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. I just joined you, man. We just had our fourth child December 21st.
So congrats. Yes, yeah. Come on. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm super excited, man. I think my wife's made it very clear that that was the finale, at least naturally.
Done. We're not doing basketball teams in these households. Come on, Doug.
Yeah. Are you done? Are you guys going more?
Or? I'm Dr. Done, bro. I'm Dr. Done.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be my future, unfortunately. Anyway, yeah. We're getting too personal. Talk to me. You're a pastor. You're an entrepreneur leading this company. You have four kids. I know there's no such thing as life-work balance, but how do you not lose your family in the midst of everything that you're doing?
That's hard. That's a really hard thing. But it's a choice, right? And I believe there's seasons for everything. In the startup phase, there is a season where you're making trade-offs family-wise. That's just the reality, right? But then as you progress in those seasons, you have to make an intentional decision that is life going to be all about my work or is it not, right? And, you know, I'm not really like a like zero-sum thinker. Typically, I'm more, hey, it's both and not either or. But when it comes to certain seasons in your family's life, sometimes it's got to be either or. Sometimes you got to make real decisions and trade-offs and weigh up, okay, is this business deal worth missing my daughter's basketball game? Is this business deal worth missing my son's soccer practice? And those are just very real decisions that you're going to have to make. But at the end of the day, life is a collection of choices and trade-offs that you're assessing. And that's not me dictating that one answer is right over the other. It's very contextual, but you got to understand the consequences of your choices, right?
Before we dive into what I call the lightning round, is there anything else you want to talk about? It could be anything. It could be something we already talked about. Anything you want to tell leaders before we dive in?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, my passion for finances within the kingdom of God is really, really deep, because I feel like in the church space specifically, we've gone through this season in our generation and maybe our parents' generation where I call it the Dave Ramsey season, where it was all about, you know, don't get in debt or get out of debt, right? The reality is this, not being in debt is not enough. If we want to further our families, if we want to think generationally, and if we want the resources to be able to go towards important missions, visions, and communities, just not being in debt is not enough. It's the parable of the talents. How are you investing what you have so that you can grow? And how can it grow so that eventually you can give in large measure? That's what we need to be thinking about. And so thank God for Dave Ramsey so that we don't have to be enslaved and be a debtor to any man. That's biblical as well. But let's also start thinking about in this next season, once you're out of debt, how are you investing? Because to just live a life on tilt and you make $100 and you spend $110 and you have nothing else left to invest, especially people of faith, we are not setting ourselves up to be the leaders. The leaders are the ones with resources.
Come on.
So how are we being wise about how we are stewarding our resources and investing our resources so that we could truly lead in every sphere and industry within society?
Any, I know that we're not financial advisors, but any investing advice just generally that you would give people?
Yeah, get it.
If they want to start that road to generosity beyond just getting out of debt?
Yeah, it's the principle of ownership. If you don't own anything right now, then all you're doing is you're renting your time. And if you have to rent your time till the end of time, you're never going to build wealth. You need to own things, because when you own things, it builds equity and it builds wealth when you're sleeping. And so own something. And again, I'm not a financial advisor, but examples of things that you can own are real estate, equities like stocks, ETFs, IRAs, mutual funds, 401ks, right? Cryptocurrency. Again, I'm not a financial advisor. Do your own research. Do your own research. And things of that nature, right? And so I think you got to think about, okay, what are things that I own in my life that are appreciating assets? And if I don't have a portfolio of that, how do I start? And if you haven't started, the prerequisite to that is you got to be saving something month over month, right? To be able to invest month over month.
Thanks, Vance, for that. Let's dive into the lightning round. First question is just what is the best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
Ooh, I heard it at a conference. It wasn't one-on-one, but I picked it up and it's been a motto in my life. Life travels at the speed of relationship.
Love it. Maybe the same answer, but if you could put a quote on a billboard for everyone to read, what would it say?
I'll just copy Nike. Just do it.
One or two books that you give away most often?
Ooh, The Art of War. The War of Art. Stephen Pressfield.
Okay,
yeah, Pressfield. Yeah. Yep, that's right. And, you know, cliche, but the Bible, it's really the only book that can transform your life.
What's something you wish people knew about your journey that they may not know?
That's a good question. You know, I think that I grew up from, maybe not many people know this, an immigrant family, and that's shaped a lot of my worldview and how I approach life.
What's something you've done that you believe everyone should experience before they die?
Oh, you got to go to Italy, the Amalfi Coast, Capri. It'll change your life. It's the closest to heaven that I've experienced.
That's on the bucket list for sure. What's your biggest leadership pet peeve?
People not responding to my texts, Slack messages, and emails.
How much time do you give them before you get ticked?
Oh, it's like it should happen immediately if I pay if I pay them.
That's awesome, man. If you get to spend time with a leader that you admire, look up to, do you have a go-to question or two that you always ask?
Ooh, that's a really good question. You know, I think I learn most from people's struggles and people's trials. And I think that's where a lot of life's lessons are. So I always love and appreciate hearing those stories as much as people are willing to share them.
Yeah. So do you have a significant trial that you'd be willing to share with us that made a significant impact on your life?
Yeah. I mean, when I realized that there was no savings fund for for going into college, it was a really terrifying feeling to understand, oh, I might not go to college if I don't figure out a way to pay for it. And for some reason, I wasn't qualifying for financial aid at that time. I think I hadn't even thought about applying for it at that time. And so in that moment was a very significant moment where this feeling of terror was met with this unrelenting determination to overcome this obstacle. And I think that when you overcome an obstacle, when you face your fear and you start creating a habit of that, there's a lot of momentum in that. There's a lot of confidence when you overcome that fear, when you face that fear and you overcome it, that you have now become an overcomer. And when you believe that you're an overcomer, that's a really powerful an ingredient in life. And so a lot of times your biggest trials and your biggest hardships are there to produce something in you. And maybe you didn't respond well. I haven't always responded well to obstacle and trial, but don't worry. Life has a way of presenting you another one. You could try again.
Wow. That's so good, man. Thanks for sharing. If you can go back and have coffee with yourself at any age that you'd actually listen to yourself, what age would you have coffee with yourself and what would you tell that version of Vance?
Freshman year of college and letting that version of myself know that it's going to be okay. And to prioritize God.
So funny, man. So I ask that question often. And I'd probably say like 10% of the time. I mean, again, the most consistent answer is I would tell them it's going to be okay. Yeah. It's just so funny how much we worry and how much stress and pressure we put on ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Last question is just at the end of your life, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people to remember you for?
Generosity. I want to live to what Paul said. I lived a life like a liquid offering poured out, just empty. I want to leave this life empty.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job so far. Thanks again for this conversation. I think it's going to add value to a ton of people. I'm super excited to start using Overflow, especially with the gala. Can't wait for that. So really looking forward to partnering with you as well. Thanks for all you do.
Hey, thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate it.
Hey, leader, thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Vance. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find ways to connect with him and links to everything that we discussed in the show notes at l3leadership.org/354. And as always, leader, I want to challenge you that if you want to 10x your growth this year, then you need to either launch or join an L3 Leadership Mastermind Group. Mastermind groups have been the greatest source of growth in my life over the last 7 years. And if you don't know what they are, they're just simply groups of 6 to 12 leaders that meet together on a consistent basis for at least 1 year in order to help each other grow, hold each other accountable, and to do life together. So if you're interested in learning more about launching or joining a group, go to l3leadership.org/masterminds or email me at dougsmith@l3leadership.org. And as always, I like to end every episode with a quote, and I'll quote Andy Stanley today. I saw this and just loved it. He said, "Your systems are perfectly designed for the results you're getting." I'll say that again because that's so good. Your systems are perfectly designed for the results you're getting. Andy Stanley. Well, leader, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Know that Laura and I love you. We believe in you, and we say it every episode, but don't quit. Keep leading. The world desperately needs your leadership.